everyone. This is the Crime Cafe, your podcasting source of great crime suspense and thriller writing. I'm your host, Debbie Mack. Before I bring on my guest, I'll just remind you that the Crime Cafe has two ebooks for sale, the 9-book box set and the short story anthology. You can find the buy links for both on my website, debbiemack.com, under the Crime Cafe link. You can also get a free copy of either book if you become a Patreon supporter. You'll get that and much more if you support the podcast on Patreon, along with our eternal gratitude for doing so. But first, let me put in a good word for Blueberry Podcasting. I'm a Blueberry affiliate, but that's not the only reason I'm telling you this. I've been using Blueberry Podcasting as my hosting service for my podcast for years, and it's one of the best decisions I ever made. They give great customer service. You're in complete control of your own podcast. You can run it from your own website. And it just takes a lot of the work out of podcasting for me. I find for that reason that it's a company that I can get behind 100% and say, you should try this. Try Blueberry. It doesn't require a long-term contract, and it's just a great company, period. And it also has free technical support by email, video, and phone. So you can get a human being there. Isn't that nice? Hi, everyone. My guest today has worked for more than 30 years as a television news reporter. She now has 4 podcasts, has authored 3 books of crime fiction, and 3 of true crime. She's also written family and children's books. She owns a company called Stage Might Communications. I am very pleased to have with me today the multi-talented Amanda Lamb. Hi, Amanda. How are you doing?
Good, Debbie. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, I really appreciate your being here, and I am just amazed with the work you're doing. I love that you create podcasts the way I create blogs. You seem to not be satisfied with just one.
Yeah, I mean, I developed an interest in podcasting when I was working for my television station a couple years ago, and I really didn't have any idea what it was about. I had done a little bit of listening to podcasts, but I hadn't really ever worked on a podcast. And writing a narrative podcast is like writing a book, or it's like writing, you know, multiple documentaries because of the length of a true crime podcast, for example. But I just really loved it. And I really developed an interest in it. And now I'm doing more interview-based podcasts like yours. And I love that as well because I'm curious about people. I'm interested in people. And it just really fits kind of where I am in my career.
That is really cool because I can really appreciate that because I've often thought of doing other interview-type podcasts because actually I have a journalism background.
There you go. Well, you
it all started with that, you know, it's like, yeah, that's where really my writing, in a sense, professionally started, kind of.
Yeah.
It started with journalism school, let's say.
Okay.
And I didn't go quite the route you did. I went to law school instead. So.
Well, you know, one of the things I'm learning, my podcast is called Ageless, and it's about women transforming personal and professionally. And I'm learning that nobody's life is linear, right? Yeah. Everybody's life seems to kind of go in many different directions, sometimes to arrive at the same place, but there's nothing about life that's linear.
Yes, I agree with you completely there. What was it prompted you to start writing crime fiction and true crime?
So I became a focused crime reporter. Most people in TV don't specialize early on in their careers. You're a general assignment reporter, which means you cover a little bit of everything. But I was always interested, especially in the courtroom process and the criminal justice process. My parents were attorneys. My father was a district attorney. And so growing up, I actually went to several murder trials and I got an opportunity to see how the process worked. I always thought I'd be an attorney. That just seemed like the thing that I was going to do given, you know, my family background. And then I really loved writing. And so in college, I started to think more about how could I combine this love of writing with kind of this interest in criminal justice, specifically in the puzzles, you know, because a criminal case involves a puzzle, trying to put these different pieces together to try to understand how it happened, why it happened, who's involved, who's responsible. And so I really just became a crime reporter a couple years into my TV reporting career, because by default, I was the one that was interested. I wanted to go to these trials that a lot of people thought were boring. And I fell in love with it. I think the thing that ended up keeping me involved in it was the fact that I could cover the incident, the crime, then the investigation, then the arrest, and then follow it all the way through, you know, to the trial, sometimes the retrial. And it really was fascinating to me. So I was a crime reporter, so obviously writing true crime was a natural extension of that. And true crime books are tedious. I mean, you have to cross your T's and dot your I's. And I enjoyed the process, but then at the same time, it felt like an extension of my work and not really something that was super creative to me. So I said, you know, I've got all these stories that I've never been able to tell. I always say a TV reporter probably reveals 5 to 10% of what they know in a story. And I had all these other stories that I wanted to share, but I had to do so in a way that was fiction. So that's how I started writing mysteries. I started taking a grain of something that really happened and then developing it into, a story with my imagination.
Totally, yeah. You get so much out of your own life experience in creating fiction.
Absolutely. No,
That's
I'm
the
sorry.
funny
I've got
part.
like a tickle in my throat.
No
Excuse me.
worries. I was just thinking, you know, it's fiction, and yet so much of it can be inspired by real life.
Absolutely. And it's funny, it's to the point where my editors over the years of my fiction have said to me, some of their notes have been like, well, I don't think this could really happen. So maybe we need to change it. And I'm like, it kind of did happen. You know, I'm very careful to take things out of the actual story that I was involved in to change the characters so that, you know, we're talking about, you know, a compilation of a couple different people, not necessarily one person in one case. But, you know, I have that background. And so when I write crime fiction, I don't have to research. I don't have to ask police officers or medical examiners or, you know, lawyers or judges much at all. I mean, very occasionally I might reach out to somebody, but I've been doing it for 35 years. So I have a lot of experience. And so I've enjoyed, you know, taking what I know and then putting it into fiction.
That is awesome. That is really awesome. How would you categorize your crime fiction? Is it more mystery or thriller oriented?
Oh, definitely more mystery. I when I started writing the fiction a couple years ago, right, really before the pandemic, but then kind of ramped it up during the pandemic, I knew as a TV reporter that I wanted to make my books clean because I had a reputation in the community and I had a responsibility to my company to make sure that whatever I did didn't reflect poorly on them. So I really decided I was going to write books that you could read on the beach, you could read on an airplane. They're fun. And yes, I get into, you know, a little bit of things that you might get into in a book like that, an autopsy, or there's some violence or whatever. But overall, you know, they're really just supposed to be entertaining. I spent so many years mired in the darkness that I really actually think it's important to have humor in your books. And so I put a lot of humor into my fiction.
Yeah, I think humor is essential, really, in a sense, to almost all fiction. Even the darkest needs a little bit of light touch. to give
Yeah,
a little
and no
reader
criticism of
relief.
anybody that wants to be very dark and macabre. I mean, that's fine. It's just I've actually seen all that stuff, and I don't necessarily want that to be part of my fiction. So I try to just make a good story, and I try to have some suspense. My first three mysteries are a series, so you can read them alone, but if you are able to read them from the beginning, which is Dead Last, Lies That Bind, and No Wake Zone, there's a backstory. So the main character, she's a TV reporter, and she is the adult survivor of a murder in her family. And so I've always been curious about that because I've covered so many cases with children who have had one parent murdered and the other parent goes to prison for that murder. And I always wondered, what that was like for them growing up, especially now when they can Google everything and find out everything, right? And so I just thought that that would be a really interesting premise. So you learn more about her background, Maddie's background, throughout the three books. I do revisit a lot of things so that you can easily catch up if you don't read them in order. I have a new book coming out in the fall. Totally new cast of characters. It is not actually titled yet, so I can't really. I have a title. My editor doesn't love it. Publisher doesn't love it. So we're still working on that. But I just decided I wanted to do something new. So this book is from four different points of view. And it has my main character, who is a newspaper reporter in this book. It has my investigator. It has the husband of a missing woman, and it has the manager of this hotel where everything takes place. And so I just said, I want to try that. I want to see what that's like. And then each character's, dovetails into the next. So one person interacts with the next person, and then their point of view takes over.
Ooh, I like when when books do that. I like when stories go that way.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's a little bit more interesting to write, to be honest. I was kind of getting tired of just being in one character's head, and I think that's why I took a break. I will definitely go back to that series because I left a lot of things hanging, so I need to go back to that. But I just wanted to try it, and I'm really proud of it. It really worked out well, and I'm excited for people to read it.
When's it going to come out? Do you know?
Right now, I think we're looking around September. So that'll be great.
That's great. I'll have to look for
Yeah. And
it.
hopefully I'll have a title by then. Yeah,
I would hope so.
I named it. Well, it's funny. I can tell you because it won't be the title. I was in the mountains when I wrote the book, and I love using the environment almost as another character. So No Wake Zone, which was my third mystery, I write that at the beach because I think that the ocean has so much beauty, but also so much kind of danger and the unknown. And I wanted to use that as the backdrop. So in the mountains during the pandemic, I was really inspired to use that as a backdrop. And I decided to call the book Crag and Tail, which is a rock formation on a mountain. But again, a little bit vague, doesn't really tell you what the book's about. So, yes, it will be something a lot more approachable when it is finally published.
Cool. Something a little that says a little more
About what,
mystery
yeah,
or
exactly. About
suspense.
what the book is about. Exactly. Exactly.
Exactly, yeah. So you said that you haven't worked on the series, but you want to. Do you have any idea where you'd like to go with the series
Yeah,
ultimately?
I mean, I think I'd like to bring her story to a conclusion. I've alluded to what's happening, and it's funny because I've taken notes from my readers. They really wanted her to have a love interest, so she got a love interest in book three, and they really wanted to know, more about her background and whether this case was going to be solved. So she's solving a case in real time, but then she has her personal backstory that she's also kind of working through and trying to figure out. So, yeah, I'd like to bring that to a conclusion because I know where it ends. but the readers don't. And so I want to get there.
Yes, indeed. So how much research do you do when you're writing fiction? There's a lot
Yeah,
that you know.
I research just the things I don't know. So for example, if I am in the mountains and there's something about, the topography or how you would go about searching for a missing person, I will look that up. And again, a lot of what I do is rip from the headlines. So it's easy to find articles and things about that. I'm a water person, I'm a beach person, I'm a paddle boarder. So in my third book, I do a lot, and I'm a boater. So I do a lot about paddle boarding and boating. And I know a lot about those topics. But of course, I had to look things up, things about the tide and things about the weather and, things that I wanted to make sure I got right. I teach journalism, introduction to journalism at a local college. And I just tell my students when I see careless errors in their stories, that could have been solved by Googling. All you have to do is look something up. Back in the day, what we had to Encyclopedia Britannica, right?
Yeah.
And you had to like physically look it up. And if you didn't have it at home, you had to go to the library. I mean, now it's all at our fingertips. Now, obviously, you have to make sure you have a credible source, but it really is all at our fingertips. And so really, I don't have to do a whole lot of research when I write my fiction, unless I'm setting it in a place I'm unfamiliar with, but I don't think I would do that. The first two books that I wrote were set in the city where I live, which is Raleigh, North Carolina, hence my backdrop.
I love it. Great backdrop.
Yeah. So I really I don't have to do too much, which is nice. Now, when I do have done the true crime nonfiction, I have to really do a lot of research because even though those are my stories, I have to make sure every single fact is vetted. And that's what I do in a true crime podcast. Every single fact has to be vetted. So it has to be connected. Think of a research paper when you were a kid or in college or high school. You have to put footnotes for every single fact. And that is exactly what we do in a podcast.
Yeah. It's almost like a legal brief. Everything you
yeah.
allege has to have a footnote or a reference to a transcript
something
or something.
To prove that it's credible. And my last podcast that I did, my last true crime for my company was called The Killing Month, August 1978. And it was about a band of brothers who were outlaws in Pennsylvania back in late 1970s. And they were eventually arrested. They stole big farm equipment. So they would go into farms in the middle of the night, back a truck up, and roll the farm equipment onto the truck. And then some of the younger members of the gang, nephews, sons, relatives, started getting caught. And when they got caught, they started talking to police. And when they started talking to police, they started dying because the head of the gang was, putting them in the ground and literally in the ground. They were killed and some of them were buried alive. And it was very, very dramatic. And my connection to that story was that my father was the district attorney who prosecuted them. So I remember the case. And then I remember going to the trial when I was 13 and 14. And so he was downsizing and he had all of this memorabilia from the trial, including some of his personal notes, but more importantly, every single article that was ever written about it in the local newspaper, the Philadelphia Inquirer and the Daily Local News. And I had those, he gave them to me. And that's where I got the idea for the podcast because there had already been a book, there had already been a movie. And I said, you know what? I'm going to try to do a podcast on this. And so talk about research. I spent about 3 months at my dining room table, collating everything and then going through every single article, typing out the facts I wanted and then referencing it, from the date and the year and everything that it was written and the and the publication. So it was a tremendous amount of research.
Wow. And what an archive of information your dad gave you.
Oh, absolutely. Although it's funny when someone, well, first of all, it's 45 years later, and I did interview many other people that he connected me with, FBI agents, local police, state police, witnesses, victims, family members, all sorts of people. But I really needed, that foundation. And I would call him or email him and say, well, what about this or what about this? He's like, it was 45 years ago. And he was a big picture guy. He was the head, the lead district attorney, and his second chair, who happened to be a woman, which was really unusual at that time in 1978, she was the one who did the yeoman's job of pulling so much of the facts together. So it was important for me to have the facts from the media, but then also get them from different people involved in the case. And then, continually double check when there was something, when there was a conflict with those facts.
I can just imagine the work you put into that. And it must have been fascinating too.
Oh, it really was because I'd always been fascinated by the case since I was, I mean, I knew about it. I was 12 when it happened. I heard my dad, my mom talking about it. Back in the day, district attorneys actually went out to crime scenes. So, we were in a kind of a rural suburban area out in Pennsylvania, outside of Philadelphia. So my dad would go in the middle of the night, to a crime scene, and then I would overhear him talking about it. And he was pretty straightforward with me when I asked him questions. So even at that young age, I knew that people had been shot, they had been buried alive. These guys were dangerous. The youngest victim was actually a 15-year-old girl, and I was not that much younger. I was 12. So there was a lot of intrigue for me at a very young age about this case.
I can imagine. I'm picturing Atticus Finch and Scout at this point.
Yes.
but
No, I mean, I
in
really
Pennsylvania.
remember. I remember my dad in the courtroom, and he had a booming voice. And I remember him, pointing at the defendant like something out of like a Perry Mason moment where he's pointing at the defendant and, says, in God we trust, this man must be convicted of murder in the first degree. Thank you, Your Honor, and, sat down. And so it made a big impression on me. I didn't realize how much of an impression until I started researching it and remembering a lot of the moments.
Yes, wow. What authors have most inspired your writing?
That's a really great question. So, I read a lot when I was younger, and then, as most people do, they get busy with life and they have children and have jobs, and they don't have as much time to do reading. So I would say early on, I read a lot of Patricia Cornwell. I read a lot of James Patterson. I never read true crime. I watch true crime and I listen to it, but I don't read it. So most of my fiction experiences were really, the best sellers. I will say in recent years, I'm really into British authors. I find that British crime authors, thriller mysteries are so just, I don't know what it is about their voice. It's just so interesting. And I wish I could look or recite the names. I would have to go to my book list. But I am in a book club now, and actually I'm in two. And so, we mix it up a lot, but I really, that would be my favorite genre, would be really any British female author who writes thrillers. I'm
I'm
in.
with you on that. I mean, I've
Yeah.
been reading some lately that are just so good.
They
And some of the
are. And
protagonists are so dark. And
yeah, and
yet they're so funny.
I think what I really like about what they do is just how they spin the story, that there's so much implied. They're not necessarily showing you something really scary. They're just implying it. And I think the scariest things in life are things that you think could actually happen. You know, I just recently read one, and I think a lot of them are like this, where, you know, they rent the country house for the weekend and then something bad happens, right? But I really like those because I think, well, how many of us rent the Airbnb, you know, and always wonder, you know, is somebody watching you, and who has stayed in this house and who lives here? And, you know, so I think there's a lot of intrigue in things that are scary that could actually happen.
Indeed. So when people ask you, oh, I was going to ask you, is it difficult, was it difficult to switch from journalism to fiction writing? Did you find any difficulty adjusting to
Yes.
letting yourself
So,
go, kind of?
yeah, I think if I'm being 100% honest, I am a nonfiction writer. I write a blog. It used to be about parenting. I write it for the TV station I just retired from, WREL. And for years it was called Go Ask Mom. They've just changed it to WREL Family. And so for 14 years I wrote about my kids and being a mom. And I really think that's probably some of the best writing I've ever done. I've written several memoirs about my kids and about, you know, parenting and working and all that. And I do think that's probably some of my best writing. So it's interesting to say, okay, now I'm a fiction writer. I'm sorry. I don't know why I keep having these, like, I think it's the pollen. It's horrible here. Where are you, Debbie?
I'm in Maryland, so the pollen hasn't come out quite yet here, but it's
It's
going to
bad
get
here. It's
there.
all over my car. Okay, regroup.
Wow.
So I think that I am definitely angled in more in nonfiction writing. So when I write fiction, I have to really give myself license to let go and not be so controlled by how did it really happen? Could this happen? And so I'm getting better at that. I really believe that every single book I write, I get better at it. Let's hope that we all get better at something the more we do it, right? But one funny story in my third book in my series, No Wake Zone, during the pandemic, I was writing a lot and rewriting a lot, and I was sitting on the couch one day and I went, "Oh, it would be so cool if this happened right here." And I was convinced that was going to be the best thing. And then I realized I had written myself into a hole. And I still really wanted that thing to happen. But now I had to go back and change 100 other things to make that happen because they didn't make sense anymore. And so that's where I think fiction writing gets a little complicated. You have to know your characters, you have to know what they look like, you have to know their backstory. You have to make sure that if they have brown eyes in this scene, they have brown eyes in this scene. And if you're just doing one point of view, the main character, she can't know what other characters know or what they're thinking. So there's a lot to keep track of. And I do, I keep a glossary for all of my characters, for every name, every location, and I have descriptions, and I have it in alphabetical order. And then I keep really detailed chapter summaries so I can go back and fix inconsistencies. But I think that's the hardest thing about fiction writing is that you're creating something that's not real. So therefore, if there is a disconnect, you know, it's your world. You created it. So if there's a disconnect, it's your fault. I also had an age issue from one of my books to the next. And so once I got into the second book, I realized that I had already established certain ages. And I thought, well, okay, that's it. Like, I can't change that now because these are characters in real time. I have not written anything about the pandemic yet. So everything I've written has been 2019, set in 2019 or pr prior. And I think I'm just going to skip it. I don't know.
Can't
I
blame
haven't
you.
decided, but I know that that's a big thing that authors really get concerned about. I also have friends that don't even want to use social media or texting or write about any of that. So everything they write or cell phones is, you know, mid 90s or prior. But I incorporate all that because that is That's the world that we live in, right?
Well, if you want to write historical fiction, that's fine. And if
Right,
you want to write
exactly.
contemporary, that works too.
I would have to research to write historical fiction. So I'm glad to write right now as things are. And I think for me, I would have no problem setting something later and referencing the pandemic, but I don't want the pandemic to be the whole story. So I'm going to have to figure that out because if I go into book four of that series, I'm either going to have to jump way ahead or I am going to be smack dab in the middle of it and have to figure out how to make that a thing,
What advice would you give to anyone who would like to make a career in writing?
That's a great question. I'm also an athlete. I'm a runner. I do yoga. And I believe that everything that we do, we get better at if we continue the discipline. So writing is a discipline. And there was no better preparation for me than being a TV reporter. So I would say get a job where you have to write all the time, as much as possible. As a journalism professor, I'm definitely seeing how a lot of the skill set for writing has just fallen by the wayside. And I don't know if that's related to the pandemic. I don't know if that's related to the fact that everything's shorthand now in texting and even email and social media. But writing is an art, and good writing, and I don't mean just writing a book or writing a screenplay or writing a podcast. I mean writing a letter. I mean writing a paragraph. If you want to engage people and share a message, whether it's nonfiction or fiction, you have to be a good writer. And I just think that it is a constant thing in my life of always trying to improve my skill set. And when you write something and it's just spot on and you feel great, and you know when you write something and it's not great. I think we all know that. And so my advice would be to write. And obviously, we all have to make a living. And I know when I graduated from college, I told my parents I was just going to go be a writer and write books. And they said, respectfully, no, you're not. You're going to get a job. And so I put all these things that I enjoyed together. I was always involved in theater and writing. And I thought, wow, TV reporting, that might be fun. That was 35 years ago. So, it worked out for me. But I would just say encourage them, no matter what kind of writing it is, just if you want to be a writer, get a job that involves writing and then work on your personal stuff on the side.
Great advice. Thank you very much. Is there anything else you'd like to add before we finish up?
No, I mean, I think that I love the fact that, you're doing a podcast about writing and about authors because I feel like so many people don't read anymore. And I will tell you that I did go for a long period of time where I didn't read much, but now I'm getting back into it. And it's just such a joy. And it's the most relaxing thing. And I think the fact that we live in a world where everything is going so fast, if you could just take a little bit of time every day to read, I think it's so good for your brain. It's so good for for anxiety. It's so good for your imagination. And I just love it. And I did just remember one of the British authors, Ruth Ware.
Oh yeah.
She's one of the ones I really enjoy. But yeah, I always have a book going now. Always, never go anywhere without a book. And
Amen to that.
yeah, I've moved away. I do audiobooks as well, but I've moved away from the electronic book. I just like having the book, and so I'm always reading a book.
I'm the same. It's like I can put an ebook out there, but yeah, I mean I'll read an ebook, but it's like there's nothing like that print book in your hand somehow.
Exactly. And I do know
It is
people who don't
relaxing.
read. I have people in my life who don't read, and I just think what they're missing. If everything were to go down, if our electrical grid went down, if the internet went down,
Exactly.
the readers, we know we're going to be okay.
That's right.
because
That's
we
exactly.
have something to do to occupy our minds, and there's never, I mean, there would never be enough time to read all the books I want to read.
Yep, exactly. Well, I want to thank you for being here today. Thank you so much.
Oh gosh, it's been a joy. Thank you for having me.
It was my pleasure. So, before we go, I will just put in a quick plug for my new podcast, or the one I'm doing in cooperation with F.R. Jameson. We discuss film noir every month at Dark and Twisted Alleys, the film noir podcast. And next up on that is going to be the movie Out of the Past, which is a fantastic movie. So don't miss our discussion. Also, if you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. If you'd like to become a supporter of the podcast, please check out the Patreon page for our podcast, where you can get bonus episodes, ad-free episodes, and other things. In the meantime, our next guest will be Stephanie Moyers. And until then, take care and happy reading.